Welcome to UN Gender Focus. I'm Deanne Penn at United Nations headquarters in New York. Coming up in this week's program, shelters on a storm-ravaged Caribbean island fight gender-based violence, and an American astronaut makes UN touchdown for women in space. But first, economics is just the tip of the inequality iceberg. That's one of the conclusions being stressed by Richard College, senior editorial advisor at the United Nations Population Fund, UNFPA, following the release of its 2017 report on the state of the world's population. The report details the link between economic inequality and reproductive health, according to Mr. College. He told Natalie Hutchison that high rates of unplanned pregnancy can affect the economic stability of entire communities.
By reducing inequality in women's access to sexual and reproductive health, you can help reduce economic inequality. And we find that throughout the developing world.
Are there any findings from this report that are particularly new?
We carried out a lot of research on developing countries and showed what progress they made or how they might have faced setbacks in reducing inequalities in certain areas of reproductive health, such as access to contraception, access to skilled birth attendants, and access to antenatal care.
What do economic inequality and family planning have in common?
Typically, we find that in developing countries, it's the poorest 20% of women who have little or no access to family planning. That means that a poor woman in those countries is vulnerable to unintended pregnancy, and unintended pregnancy can keep a woman out of the paid labor force. It can jeopardize her future, and that can affect her earnings potential in the long run. And with reduced earnings, you know, her household suffers, her community suffers, her whole nation suffers. But we make the link between how much control a woman has over her life and how that translates into economics. And, you know, again, we show that by reducing these inequalities in access to sexual reproductive health, it can make a big difference in reducing economic inequalities that affect the whole country.
What would you say the greatest barrier is in achieving equal access to reproductive health rights?
In 18 countries, this is cited in the report, 18 countries have laws on the books that require a husband's permission for a wife to get a job. There are institutional barriers. You know, some are even related to, let's say, child care and maternity leave. 60% of women in the world have no legal right to maternity leave. If a poor woman has a child and doesn't have access to child care or can't afford child care, she's going to stay out of the paid labor force. That's going to keep her in poverty. That's going to keep her children in poverty. That's going to lead to intergenerational poverty. Economics is just the tip of the inequality iceberg.
Managers of shelters in hurricane-ravaged Antigua and Barbuda are being trained to make sure these locations are safe spaces for women and girls. The tiny Caribbean island nation was devastated by Hurricane Irma, a Category 5 storm, which struck in early September. As in other natural disasters, the UN Population Fund, UNFPA, fears the resulting displacement and service disruptions could increase the risk of gender-based violence. Elizabeth Phillip traveled there recently and spoke to UNFPA specialist Verena Bruno, who is working with the government in the areas of protection, prevention, and response to gender-based violence.
As part of the main interventions, we have assessed the situation in the shelters where the Barbudans, particularly at the moment, are being housed. And we have noticed that there is a great need of integration of protection from GBV in the shelters. So as part of our interventions, we are making sure that the shelter managers and all the volunteers engaged are trained in integrating gender-based violence prevention and response in the general shelter management. We are also, again, conducting assessments, the focus group discussions with the women and girls, boys and men in the places where they are hosted to make sure that we are clear in terms of what are their needs in terms of safety and what is the possible exposure, higher risk of exposure to gender-based violence.
And are there specific steps that the shelters can take to ensure protection?
Yes, of course. We are guided by the Interagency Standing Committee guidelines on GBV mainstreaming, and we know that GBV has to be integrated at all the different stages, from the setup of the shelter to the actual phase of care management, and even at the closure of the shelter. When these shelters will be closed, the host population still needs to know where they can refer. They can be referred in case of GBV cases. So we make sure that the shelter management is well prepared to address, to integrate GBV at the different levels.
Are you aware of any instances so far in the past few weeks?
Yes, we heard of some cases. And, with gender-based violence, reporting is always a big issue. But in emergencies, we assume that gender-based violence is happening because of, the different community dynamics, the structure is changed. And when we look at shelters in particular, we know that main issues can be overcrowding. They share rooms with sometimes more people. Is not only the close family, and public lighting is not necessarily good enough, security issues. So all of this can create higher risk of exposure to GBV, and we need to make sure this is prevented and we're also ready to respond.
Back when American astronaut Scott Kelly was a military pilot in the Navy, seeing a woman in his class would have been almost as common as seeing a unicorn. At the UN this month to discuss the Space for Women project, the retired United States astronaut and UN champion for space shared his views on how to get more women and girls involved in the STEM subjects, that's science, technology, engineering, and maths. He spoke to Liz Scafidi.
I try to do as much as I can as an advocate for spaceflight and promoting the UN Office of Outer Space Affairs for spaceflight and sustainable development. Today we had a big meeting about women in space, Space for Women is what it was called, and also had the privilege of meeting with some really young but incredibly accomplished people, spending some time with them and sharing my thoughts on spaceflight.
How can we encourage more women and girls to consider careers in science?
Separating women and girls from men, in my mind, in this area, is kind of hard to do, because I was a kid that was not interested in science and math until I found the thing that motivated me. And it came in the form of a book, The Right Stuff. Was able to relate to the characters, which were real people, and it made me decide that I wanted to try to be like those guys. And to do that, I needed to be a good student. I needed to be an engineer or a scientist, and that spark is what got me involved in the STEM subjects. It was basically role models. For me as a man, it was male role models. Mostly female role models are what young girls are going to need to inspire them, because you look towards your role model. If they're more like you, they tend to inspire you more.
How do we find these female role models?
Work hard, never give up, never stop looking for them. Through the course of my career, I've noticed incredible changes. I was lucky when I was a kid. I had two role models, my grandmother and my mother, that were very strong, motivated, accomplished women. And I also had a father, despite his kind of like outwardly gruff exterior. He was absolutely like race, color, gender blind. Finding people like that in your lives and networking and putting the right people together with the right people is something I think we need to continue to work on. But like I said, in my experience, I was a military pilot. When I went into the Navy, I was in a squadron with like maybe 40 other officers, all men, one African American. A woman in that career field at that time, seeing a woman officer or even an enlisted person in where I was working, it's almost like seeing a unicorn. Fast forward 25, 30 years later, and the previous astronaut class we picked, 5 men, 5 women. So 50-50. I'm looking forward to the day when it's 60-40. 6 women and 4 men.
You've been listening to UN Gender Focus from the United Nations in New York. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook under UN News and on Twitter under UN News Center. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Deanne Penn.